Welcome to Unlike-Minded, a sci-fi audio anthology.
The Implant by Patrick Westwater. Rain beat down on the windshield as a hybrid sports car moved swiftly up I-95 North. The monsoon ripped wet auburn leaves off oak tree branches and pelted them onto the highway, challenging the car's state-of-the-art anti-hydroplaning feature. Sometimes the problem with relationships is that one or both of the partners will get comfortable and refuse to grow, a man's voice echoed, prompting Ben to steal a glance at Mila as he reclined in luxury Italian leather, lab-grown in China. As always, Ben hoped the wisdom of his favorite podcast would permeate Mila's adamant refusal to engage on topics ranging from microdosing to venison. It didn't. Evident from the way she seemed to count raindrops streaking down the passenger side window, her glassy, emerald eyes fixed on water streams racing to the bottom, presumably looking to occupy her mind with anything but the musings of a middle-aged man and a microphone in his repurposed garage. To your point, I think women, and this isn't necessarily a bad thing, but they rely too much on emotional extrapolation, another man replied. Ben frowned. Well, I don't agree with that part, he offered in solidarity, to deaf ears, or at least uninterested ones. Are you on? Ben asked. Yes, Mila replied. Swift and dry with an American accent, though her lips didn't form those letters. We can listen to something else, he offered, attempting to channel empathy. Whatever you want, she answered as a heavy silence fell upon the car. In that silence, Ben noticed a dark sedan merging onto the otherwise empty highway. He turned back to his girlfriend, who leaned her forehead against the icy window, absorbing the thuds of the storm pellets against the glass. Accepting defeat on this leg of the journey, Ben turned the podcast off and opted for an indie playlist Mila had curated months before, a peace offering of sorts. But as the opening chords played, Mila's phone vibrated on her lap, a call from an unknown number. Pretending to brush her hair back, Mila subtly tapped the bone behind her ear, turning it off. It, of course, being the implant. Privet, mama, Mila said, lips and words perfectly aligned in her native tongue. Ben frowned at the cordial greeting, rolled his eyes. He hated when she did this. The implant's purpose was to bring them together, to connect them, and everyone else, in ways they couldn't before. After all, how would their relationship have grown if not for the revolutionary technology of the implant? Started, even. How would Ben have asked her out at that crypto conference if they hadn't been able to sync? How would he have taken her to bed that first night if he could not impress her with his investment knowledge and witty puns? And how much more effort would he have had to put forth in convincing her to move in with him after 2 months if he had to actually learn a new language? The answer was obvious. The implant was the reason they could communicate, the reason they found solid footing in this relationship, which is why it should never be turned off.
Fuchi, cheristavatstet miluklucim,
Mila offered the caller warmly. His displeasure not to be ignored, Ben tapped Mila on the shoulder and pointed at the space behind his ear. Mila nodded and obediently tapped her implant again. Suddenly, the conversation turned back to English, despite her lips continuing in Russian like a dubbed film. There's a lot of rain, but it may clear up soon, she said on the phone, her words more rigid now that they were observed by a third party. Ben relaxed, assuaged by familiar syllables and the ego boost he received from his partner obliging requests. All right, mama, Mila said with a hint of dismay.
Ask her if she saw my interview,
Ben chimed, like an eager toddler looking to show off a new toy. She had to go, Mila replied, hanging up as awkward silence swallowed the car once more.
Which honestly was fine by her. Mila had always preferred silence. It's one of the reasons she and Ben had made it this far. See, Ben thought the implant helped them communicate, but for Mila, it had a very different purpose. It allowed Ben to talk and for her to listen. You know I hate it when you turn it off. It makes me insecure, Ben expressed as he crinkled his brow and pouted, a move she'd caught on to by now. She called it the face. The face worked on most people. Hell, it even worked on Mila. at first. Because Ben was attractive. More than attractive. Science claimed that genetic curation technology was still too far off, but Ben was empirical evidence to the contrary. Broad shoulders, sculpted chin, each hyper-masculine feature chosen a la carte by the hand of God. That's what made the face so dangerous, so effective. It gave the illusion of vulnerability from a man who, on the surface, should have none. But it wasn't vulnerability. It was, as she'd come to learn, manipulation. "I'm sorry you're insecure," Mila returned bluntly, examining the new gel manicure on her hands. "Just because I want to explore with other people doesn't mean I feel differently about you," Ben reassured. "And just because you take me on vacation doesn't mean I have to change my mind about things," Mila retorted. "Your feelings are valid, but you're being selfish, and I hope it doesn't come back to bite you," warned Ben. "Besides, I'm not saying I'm going to be out there fucking everything that moves. I just think that maybe it's beneficial for us to take a harder look at what we both want out of this relationship." Ben paused, waited, but Mila thought better of answering. She returned to counting raindrops, leaving Ben no choice but to stew in silence until her emotional phalanx forced him to turn his attention back to the road.
A high-tech lock buzzed as soft recess lighting illuminated the rooms of a large home surrounded by a natural wall of drenched maple trees. Ben led Mila into the well-built and expensive structure. He watched her admire the refashioned lobster traps and buoys hung along the wall in the foyer, caught by the many hands of his lineage, a prominent one in the New England fishing industry before they transitioned to legal cannabis. "Estate, lock," Ben commanded as he turned to the door. The electronic lock whirred, sealing the front door as the storm continued to knock. Mila observed as she pressed her palms together, perhaps transferring warmth from hand to hand. Ben eyed Mila as she waded into the living room, absorbing the layout. Her head turned toward the family portrait above the fireplace as she ran her hand along the mantle. Ben bit his lip. Something about her light, fluid touch turned Ben on, even if she wasn't touching him. "Estate, fireplace," Ben dictated seductively. Whoosh. A fire sparked at Mila's feet, sending her a few steps back into Ben's arms. He smiled. He held her. She let him.
Until she didn't. "Don't worry, you'll meet them at some point," Ben said as Mila pulled away and approached the leather couch in the middle of the room. His face snarled with frustration, perhaps wondering if she was still upset by the conversation in the car. But she wasn't upset. She was intrigued. The living room matched the rustic decor of the foyer, but the place didn't feel old so much as it felt lived in. Or as if someone had paid to make it feel lived in, Mila thought as she placed her finger on a dusty windowsill. "I made a reservation downtown. Figured you'd want to check out the area," Ben said. But Mila hardly heard him as she analyzed the cottagecore luxury. The seclusion. "Let's stay in tonight. I want to cook for you. We can see downtown tomorrow," she replied, an offer to which Ben nodded appreciatively. Then Mila shivered, rubbed her shoulders. "Estate, temp up 3 degrees, Ben ordered. "Can I do it too?" Mila asked. Ben smirked, let the question linger to build anticipation as if he wasn't going to let her experience one of the premier features of the home, despite her knowing it was half the reason he brought her. "Come here," he said finally, leading Mila to the panel on the wall by the fireplace. He touched the panel with his finger and it illuminated a pale blue. He took Mila's hand and guided it to the panel, pressing the pad of her forefinger to it. After a moment, he guided the finger to her implant, where it rested before the panel turned green. "Now try," Ben offered. "What can it do?" Mila questioned. "Anything you ask," Ben replied with a hint of vibrato. "Estate, suck Ben's dick," Mila challenged with a mischievous gleam in her eye. "Okay, almost anything," Ben conceded. Estate? Champagne, Mila tried again. To her surprise, the house responded. A symphony started in the kitchen. Cabinets creaked, glasses clinked. Bubbly flowed down the side of two flutes as champagne arrived on a silent drone floating through the air. First to Mila, who took her glass, then to Ben, who took his. They cheersed, they sipped, they smiled. Estate, preheat the oven to 425, Mila commanded, enjoying her newfound control. I have something else I'd like to show you, Ben added coyly.
Night fell as Ben opened the door into a musty attic filled with photo albums and old fishing gear pushed against the wall. The floor was worn and scuffed with footmarks in the middle of the room. Close your eyes, he said as Mila rose the steps behind him. Is this a torture chamber? She teased. Yeah, less mold than the basement and the sunlight hits the shackles just right, he quipped. Mila laughed and climbed another step. I'm serious, shut them. Mila huffed playfully and hovered her palms over her eyes. Ben gently took her elbow and let her in. He shut the door behind her and positioned Mila in the center of the room. Her shoes felt the scuffs on the laminated flooring, and her nose wrinkled. Ben absorbed her confusion as he enjoyed the power of knowing what comes next. Where are we right now? Ben asked. In your parents' attic, she replied. Are you sure? He asked again, placing a shimmering yet almost translucent metal glove over his hand. Mila watched through her fingers as Ben smoothed the glove over his palm, her curiosity forcing her to disobey his command. Hey, closed, he chastised, catching her. Mila listened and closed them tight. Ben waited a moment, then came up behind her and tapped her implant with a gloved finger.
As a white-breasted water hen soared by Mila's face, whipping her hair back, she flinched and opened her eyes to find herself on an island in the Maldives. Water lapped her ankles as her bare toes dug into the white sand along the shoreline. The warm, humid air filled her lungs as Ben watched her flesh sizzle beneath the sun beaming down on her copper-colored skin, which had been stripped of its vitality by the harsh northeast winter. Ben shielded his eyes as Mila gazed across the Indian Ocean while salt water, actual salt water, sprinkled her face. How? She whispered. I can take you anywhere you'd ever want to go, Ben said. And I will, if you let me. Mila waded further out into the water. Will I drown if I keep going? She wondered aloud. Ben approached and wrapped his arms around Mila's waist. I wouldn't let that happen, Ben replied, turning Mila toward him. The pair locked eyes. Fingers twitched. Chins trembled. Breath hastened until Mila pounced on Ben, ravenous and lustful, just as she knew he'd hoped. Hands tore close, lips ravaged flesh. Mila mounted her lover. Where do you want to go? Ben shuddered as the simulation rumbled. He grabbed her by the neck, pulled her in and nibbled her ear as he whispered, Where? Istanbul. Suddenly, she was riding him in the shadow of the blue mosque. Morocco. In a penthouse in Marrakesh. Reykjavik. In a hot spring at sunset. They grinded. They moaned. They quivered. Mila grabbed Ben's throat with her right hand, squeezing hard as he taught her, until he climaxed. Mila seared scallops on a cast iron pan as Ben noodled on his laptop at the table. The kitchen was much like the living room's modern approach to rural living. A ceiling-high, climate-controlled wine room anchored an open floor plan with all the latest Swedish cooking equipment. Plating dinner, Mila caught a glimpse of the lake outside at the bottom of a large hill through the trees, wondered how long it'd take to roll down. Ready, she chimed.
Ben dutifully shut his laptop and pushed it to the side. Mila rested a plate of scallops in front of him. He grated the meal, impressed, before Mila joined him at the table, adding a dish of chive-garnished baked potatoes to the spread. Ben refilled their glasses with 1980 Pinot from a crystal decanter purchased on a family trip to the Czech Republic. They cheersed. They ate. They smiled. "This is nice, isn't it?" Ben asked.
"Wonderful," she replied. "I'm happy you brought me here."
"This works, you and me."
Mila offered a genuine smile, then surveyed her plate to craft the perfect bite.
Ben's fork rested on the table, his eyes fixed on Mila for a long, drawn-out pause. "It's just sex, Mila. It's..."
"So upstairs in Morocco, that was just sex to you," Mila cut in.
"No, that was me showing what I can give you."
"If I do what you want."
"It's just this one thing that I..."
"No, it's not. It's not just this one thing. You asking me to relocate to Boston was just one thing. You asking me to take fewer assignments was just one thing."
"If you had a problem, you should have said something."
"I did, Ben. But it's impossible to get you to hear something you don't want to. This isn't about me being offended you want to have sex with other people. This is about the fact that you keep changing the goalposts in this relationship."
"It's not changing the goalposts. It's adapting. When you do what I do, you have to adapt."
"And what do you do, exactly? What's so important you have to do it behind your family's back when you..."
"Careful. Be very careful and consider everything I've given you. Everything I can give you."
"I'm not stupid. I know you used me to bury the story."
"And you used me to get more of them. If you don't think life is built on transaction, then you aren't the same reporter I met in Miami."
"Well, if you think you can use your power and influence to manipulate everyone, I guess you are the same tech bro I met."
Ben scoffed.
Mila scowled.
A stare down ensued, until suddenly, the house plunged into darkness. A power outage. "Of course," Ben groaned. "Estate, reset the power grid." He waited, but nothing happened. No whirring, no clanking, no wish granted. He huffed and rose from his seat, striding to an old-fashioned electrical panel on the wall. He flicked the main switch, but still nothing happened. Darkness prevailed. Frustrated, Ben flipped the switch again, then again, then again. About to attempt the futile exercise once more, Ben noticed a movement outside. He squinted through the window, sure he saw something, but unsure of its nature. This concerned him. He hated being caught unaware. As Ben strained his eyes, his uneasiness spread to Mila, who rose from the table, clocking his concern. "Estate, are we locked?" he asked, to no response. "Mila, is that door locked?" Ben asked, his eyes fixed on the wilderness. Receiving no answer, he turned to find Mila staring at him. "Can you check if that door behind you is locked?"
"Dewukichul,"
Mila replied in her native tongue, lips matching words. "Oh, real funny. The power grid doesn't affect the implant," he snapped as he returned to the table. "Turn on," Ben commanded, tapping behind his ear like he did in the car. Mila mimicked the move, tapping obediently.
"Ya ne moguk panyet tebya,"
Mila said. "Are you fucking serious right now? Is this a joke?" Ben replied. He strode over to Mila and grabbed her neck forcefully. He tapped her implant.
"Что происходит?"
Mila asked. Ben swallowed fear.
"Что происходит?"
she exclaimed again. Then, a creaking echoed through the kitchen. The pair froze. No translation needed for the sounds of a cabin in the woods. Ben pointed to himself and made a key turning motion. "I'm gonna check the locks. You try and get service," he whispered, waving his phone at her. Understanding, Mila grabbed her phone and checked for a signal as Ben left the room. Mila tried to call her latest contact. The ominous sound of a dial tone answered. A deadline. Ben re-entered. "Looks like all the doors are locked." "No phone," Mila mustered in broken English. "I think it's probably just the storm." The rumbling of a car engine cut him off. They rushed to the foyer to find Ben's headlights blinding them through the window. "What the fuck?" he muttered. The car slowly backed up, turned towards the driveway's edge, and faced the steep drop above the lake. "What the fuck?" Ben scrambled for the front door as his car accelerated off the hill and careened into the lake. He screamed and turned to find Mila wielding an iron poker from the fireplace.
"What are you doing?"
Ben exclaimed, grabbing the poker from Mila.
"Fight," she bellowed. "Fight what?"
he yelled. fear getting the best of him. Police, okay? Police. We have to call the police. Ben scanned the house for an idea, then handed the poker back and took off for the stairs. Ben barreled into the attic, followed closely by Mila. He rummaged through boxes until he found one filled with radio equipment and sea navigation tools. Ben powered on two walkie-talkies in quick succession, but neither worked. Mila turned to face the door before a crackling drew her attention back to Ben, who fiddled with a live radio, tuning it to different frequencies. Hello? He offered aimlessly into the ether, receiving nothing but a low static hum. Then, a loud thud from downstairs echoed through the house. Ben recoiled. Mila snapped into action. She ran for the door, but Ben yanked her back. What are you doing? He asked. Fight, she answered. Ben absorbed her resolve, her fearlessness, and drew strength from it. Enough strength to take the poker and hand her the radio. Stop when you hear a voice, he explained, demonstrating tuning frequencies. A voice, he emphasized as if talking to a child. A voice, she repeated calmly. Ben nodded, then turned to the door, to his mission. Ben, Mila said. He turned and she kissed him on the mouth, passionately, longingly, grabbing his neck like she had hours earlier. With his blood already pumping, this was the final shot of adrenaline, the last push he needed to embark on whatever heroic journey lay two floors below. With a deep breath, Ben ventured out as he listened to the rain beat down on the roof. Radio static receded as he neared the bottom step until he heard what sounded like a gravelly voice echo over the line. Hello? He froze. He listened, but heard nothing else and continued on, chastising his mind for playing tricks on him. Ben tiptoed down the steps onto the second floor, clutching the poker like a baseball bat. He readjusted the grip of his clammy palms as he crept down a narrow hallway to the main staircase. Estate, call the police, he muttered in one last futile attempt. As he reached the landing, he turned to look through the open doorway of the main bedroom, the one he and Mila were sharing, the one with the wraparound windows and retractable moonroof looking down upon a plush, king-sized bed. He eyed their mostly unpacked suitcases, their unruffled sheets, their toiletries on the nightstand, and then, in the corner of the room above a small brown satin couch, pale yellow curtains billowed. Ben entered the room and neared the window. As he feared, it was open. He reached to close it, but something caught his eye. A footprint on the couch cushion. Smack, smack, smack. An aggressive noise rang through the house. Ben rushed out of the bedroom and back into the attic to find Mila standing by the door, smacking the radio out of frustration. Mila, we have to... Ben! Mila shrieked as a bag swooped over Ben's head from behind. Fire crackled as footsteps scuffed across the floor, moving furniture. Hushed voices whispered. The bag flew off Ben's head. He sat on the living room couch next to Mila, whose head was still covered and slumped over the armrest, both bound by zip ties around their hands and ankles. Ben whimpered through a tape gag as three masked strangers stood before him. Two men and a woman, per their silhouettes, backlit by a roaring fire in the hearth, the only source of light besides the moon through the streaky windows. He analyzed his captors. The woman was slender and feline in movement, smooth, subtle, and instinctive. The first man was a brute, a mass of muscle and aggression beneath concealing all-black attire. His folded arms bulged while his boots tested the limits of the creakier floorboards. The second man, closest to the couch, was smaller and more innocuous. His arm hung broken in a black sling across his body, and his shoulders hunched forward as if he'd spent years bent over a desktop. Mila, Ben whispered to no response, not even a twitch. Mila! The hulking stranger approached the couch, allowing Ben a better look at his garb, a ski mask with goggles around the eyes. Over the mouth of the mask, the cloth was dyed white and painted into a toothy smile. The hulking stranger stared at Ben, then removed Mila's bag and lifted a pink salt to her nostril. She gasped, shocked awake by ammonia. The one-armed stranger motioned to the feline stranger, who opened Ben's laptop and carried it over to the couch, placing it on the coffee table before Ben. She pulled a sharp hunting knife from a sheath on her leg. Ben shut his eyes and grimaced as he awaited the pain until she cut him free and removed his gag. Ben looked at his unrestrained hands in grateful shock before the feline stranger gashed his palm with the blade, and he howled. She caressed his jawline with the bloody steel. A warning. A reminder of who held the power.
My family has money. Not here, but...
You have what we want, the one-armed stranger offered, his voice matching his stature. In there, he said as he pointed toward a USB plugged into his computer.
How did you get that?
Ben nervously wondered, instantly recognizing the device. Open it, the one-armed stranger replied. With all eyes on Ben, he listened as Mila focused on her breathing, a technique she'd learned to calm her nerves. Deep through the nose and out through the mouth until her heart felt like it kissed her ribcage.
Are you going to kill me? Ben asked.
Log in, the one-armed stranger returned coldly. Ben looked down at his computer. The login screen felt like a trap door. He leaned forward and typed.
Here you go. You're in.
The feline stranger snatched the computer and carried it to a table against the window. She maneuvered the desktop and opened the USB to find it locked. She turned to the one-armed stranger and shook her head. What's the passcode? He asked Ben.
I don't have it. I keep it in my office.
Ben whimpered. Mila exhaled again, audibly this time, catching the attention of the one-armed stranger. The one-armed stranger motioned to the hulking stranger. The hulking stranger ripped Mila off the couch by her hair and dragged her towards the fireplace. Her flailing was no use against the force of a mountain.
Stop!
Ben cried. The hulking stranger froze just short of plunging Mila's head into the flames. She scrambled to sit up, leaned against a small fence grate sticking out of the ground, not yet noticing that the spikes on the grate were sharp. Sharp enough to... You control what happens to her, the one-armed stranger said. So I'll ask again. What's the passcode?
I can't. The facility uses a mind scrambler. It wipes my memory so I can only use it in the office,
Ben explained, hoping they'd find him useless and move on. Why? The one-armed stranger asked. Why do you think? Ben retorted, holding up the hand restraints. Those scramblers aren't as effective as they claim to be, the one-armed stranger warned before nodding to the hulking stranger, who grabbed another poker from the fire and ripped Mila's shirt open. He thrust the poker into the fire, boiling the tip till it turned magma red.
Ben!
Mila screamed, surely unprepared to be branded, or worse.
Okay. Try 0811,
Ben offered, racking his brain for the code he used every goddamn day, praying that his mind was sharper than his firm's data security measures. The feline stranger punched in the code, but it was no good. A message popped up that read, 1 of 3 attempts. The feline stranger turned the laptop to the one-armed stranger, who strolled over to read. What happens after 3 wrong guesses? The one-armed stranger asked Ben.
It wipes the wallet,
Ben answered, his voice shaking as his muscles spasmed beneath sweat-stained clothing. The one-armed stranger sighed, spoke to the feline stranger in hushed, foreign tones as the hulking stranger took a few steps closer to hear them. With their attention diverted, Ben motioned to Mila. He noticed the sharp edges of the fireplace grate. He glanced down at his wrists, then back to Mila. A signal. She watched his wrists as Ben subtly rubbed them together. Then, the hulking stranger turned his attention back to Ben, who froze. The hulking stranger neared the couch as Mila felt the ground behind her until she grasped the sharp grate and understood. Try again, the one-armed stranger commanded, returning to the couch. You created the code, so it's in your head somewhere.
I don't know it. Please, just let me call my family and we can get you money,
Ben tearfully bartered. The one-armed stranger crouched to Ben's eye level. Ben stared at his reflection in the unfeeling glass goggles. That drive is worth more than anything your family could ever offer, and you know it, the man said, even if they don't. Ben's lips tightened. He squirmed on the couch. The man's knowledge of the situation scared him more than the physical threats. The secret account was, after all, secret, he thought. Taking advantage of the focus on Ben, Mila subtly rubbed her wrists against the grate, slowly tearing through the zip tie.
If I'm wrong,
It's all gone, Ben stuttered. The one-armed stranger stared coldly back at him, betraying no emotion behind the mask. 0826, Ben eked out. The feline stranger typed. They waited. Until. Another headshake. Another failure. Ben's heart sank. The one-armed stranger motioned to the hulking stranger. In a flash, the hulking stranger pulled Mila away from the grate and cut her free. He grabbed her wrist and pressed her hand flat against the floor, stabbing the poker through it. She shrieked. Ben held back vomit as the hulking stranger released the poker. It stood straight up, wedged between the floorboards and Mila's flesh as she writhed in pain.
Why?
Ben absently asked the one-armed stranger. One more guess, he replied. Shocked and disgusted, Ben absorbed Mila shaking on the ground. His remorseless captors. The isolation he felt in his family lake house turned gulag.
Please, please,
Ben whined. The one-armed stranger turned to the hulking stranger, who pulled a silenced pistol out of his waistband. He pressed it to the back of Mila's head, dug it into her skull, and forced her chin onto the hardwood.
Пожалуйста, пожалуйста, не убивай меня,
Мила whispered as her hair hung over her sweaty face. The one-armed stranger listened and turned to Ben. Do you know what she just said? Ben stared at Mila, who couldn't look up, but continued to mutter a phrase that in English meant, please don't kill me. No, Ben answered, defeated and demoralized. One more guess, the one-armed stranger replied. Ben breathed deep through his nostrils, closed his eyes, and summoned memories from deep within his hippocampus. Holy shit. Ben's eyes bulged. Mila forced her head up, all eyes on the couch, all eyes on Ben. Holy shit! Holy shit! He shuddered. Thankful. Grateful. Confident he came up with the answer to end this nightmare. 0874, he declared. The room fell silent. The wind picked up outside, slamming leaves and rain against the windows as thunder cracked in the distance. With a reverence reserved for their last attempt, the feline stranger typed the code, took a sharp breath, pressed enter, and turned to the one-armed stranger. Ohi, she said. The one-armed stranger bowed his head, the only translation Ben needed.
What? No, that was it!
Ben screamed. The one-armed stranger turned to his hulking counterpart and nodded. The hulking stranger stepped back, aimed the barrel at Mila's skull, and pulled the trigger, sending Mila's head thumping to the floor.
No!
Ben cried.
That was it! That was the passcode! What the fuck is wrong with you? That was it!
The feline stranger closed the laptop, solemn. The one-armed and hulking strangers converged on Ben. The silenced barrel pressed between his eyes. He whimpered and spat like a scared child. No more guesses.
Wait!
Thud. Darkness. Total. Utter. Darkness. Sunlight poked through the rain clouds as Ben slowly regained consciousness on the living room floor. A goldfinch landed on a bare branch outside, warbling to welcome a new day.
Mila!
He yelled, jumping to his feet.
Mila!
Ben patted his pockets and found his phone. He fished it out, about to dial, when,
this has to be the most energetic hangover I've ever seen, Mila quipped as she strolled into the living room wearing Ben's oversized Drake t-shirt.
Ben stared at her until he was certain it was true. She was totally unharmed.
Are you okay? Ben muttered.
Are you? She replied. Ben touched his forehead, anticipating the crater of a gunshot wound, or at least the stinging swell of a bruise. But he felt neither. Just cold sweat beating on his pale skin. Perhaps it had all been a dream.
Okay, that's the last time we play that stupid drinking game, Mila said. But I did appreciate the bed all to myself last night.
Ben stared at her, dazed. She smiled.
All right, why don't I go make us some coffee? She offered before heading to the kitchen.
With Mila out of sight, Ben examined himself again. No scratches, no bruises, no signs of the night before. Relieved, he decided to confirm his reality. First, he inspected the attic, which he found to be in perfect order. Boxes neatly packed along the wall as they had been before the pair arrived. Ben sighed, thought himself stupid for worrying, but then remembered. The second place he ought to check was the bedroom. When he entered, he noticed the bed had been slept in. Half slept in, at least, as Mila's side was ruffled and bore the indent of her curled-up frame while the other side lay flat and tucked, having been forsaken in favor of the downstairs couch. Ben approached the bed and tidied Mila's side. She could never quite get it right for him, no matter how many times he demonstrated. Then, he turned to find the window closed and the couch untouched. There was no sign it had even been sat on, let alone stepped. Appraising the quarters, Ben was even more convinced he needed to stop drinking so much, or that he needed to bring his cocaine next time. With his search complete, Ben happily descended the steps onto the foyer and peered through the window to find his car parked in the driveway where he'd left it, shimmering brighter than he even remembered. The rain must have done it some good, he thought, as he headed into the living room toward the kitchen. But as he passed the hearth, something caught his eye on the ground. He froze, listened to Mila, presumably making a mess in the kitchen while belting out an Olivia Rodrigo throwback. Then, Ben knelt by the fireplace as the morning sun shimmered through the windows, slowly reached his fingers down to the hardwood, and touched a spotty patch of dried blood.
A dark sedan cruised down I-95 through Connecticut, spurred on by a strong southerly wind and the sun warming the road ahead. Inside the car, the one-armed stranger drove, now unmasked, revealing an academic's soft, thoughtful features. Beside him in the passenger seat, the feline stranger's cropped bangs dangled over her eyebrows as she diligently typed on Ben's computer. In the back seat behind the driver's side, the hulking stranger, who could double as an NFL linebacker, gazed at the remnants of fall foliage along the highway. The one-armed stranger glanced into the rearview mirror. Be glad it's not a break, it'll heal quick. Next to the hulking stranger in the back seat, Mila looked up as she rubbed her bandaged hand. She's milking it, I completely missed the bone, the hulking stranger smirked. Mila punched him in the shoulder playfully. Plunging it to the floor was a bit dramatic. Could have done with a gash instead. She replied in English with a heavy Russian accent. Lo siento, no comprendo, the hulking stranger replied, pretending to tap the implant behind his ear, but clearly speaking Spanish. Estoy seguro de que comprendes que eres un coño, Mila jabbed back as the car erupted in laughter. How long will the simulation run? The one-armed stranger asked. Mila picked at a thin layer of film on the palm of her uninjured hand, the one she choked Ben with. She peeled it off like dead skin and placed it gently into a compact gadget box on the middle seat next to her. He'll see me for 48 hours before I vanish, and the concussion you gave him hits like a sledgehammer, she answered coolly. The one-armed stranger nodded, satisfied, then turned back to the feline stranger, revealing a scar behind his ear where his implant should be. How's it looking, he asked. Almost transferred, she replied with a thick Greek accent. And how's the recon coming along, the one-armed stranger said. I'm an angel investor backed by Saudi money looking to get into the satellite business, she answered confidently. And she's a Xanax-addicted CFO with a penchant for foreign brunettes. The one-armed stranger smiled. All right, Ale, you ready to finish yours? The one-armed stranger asked. The hulking stranger grinned, pulled out his phone, and dramatically cleared his throat for laughs. Then he dialed a number. It rang and rang and rang until... Hey, baby, ready for the trip?
This has been Unlike Minded, a sci-fi audio anthology.
The Implant was written by Patrick Westwater and narrated by Billy Langdon and Lila Estrada. Unlike Minded is an August Year Round production, created, produced, and edited by Robbie Hine. Our associate producer for this episode is Alexander Daniels. We'd like to give a special thank you to everyone who has supported this independent podcast production. You can keep up to date and find more info about this podcast and others on Instagram at the handle August Year Round Prod, or email us at augustyearround@gmail.com. And be sure to subscribe, leave a rating and review, and tune in next week for another episode of Unlike Minded. Thank you for listening.